from Alatoricht. However, I enjoy killing, so I brought a battalion of our soldiers in case my nice words didn't work on you, O Barney. Which way would you prefer? You'll let them live if I come with you? I knew my limits. There was no way I could defeat all of her warriors. I have no use for them. I think the Empress does, though. She tapped her chin with her gloved hand and smiled coyly. What do you mean? Nadia asked. If the O'Barney comes with me, I have something from the Empress to give to you. If he chooses to die here with you, then I'll keep it. Islata's eyes stared into mine. The gold flecks in her irises danced in the torchlight. I will come with you. I don't want to go to the castle, though. I thought about the massive spider structure and held back a shiver of displeasure. There were too many memories tied to that place. I turned to look at Nadia, and her eyes began to water. Agreed. You won't have to set foot inside of the castle. The Empress has made her camp outside the walls of the city until we can determine what caused the east wing to collapse. Islata clapped her hands together in mock joy. Ah, don't worry, pretty little human. Her voice grew thick like honey when she saw Nadia stare at me. I'll take good care of your pretend destroyer. Perhaps you'll be able to see him again some day. Maybe if you pray to your spirits, it will happen. Her words twisted to mockery at the end. That is enough, Islata. Her words just enraged Nadia further. You said you had something for her. Yes. She reached behind her belt and pulled out a small wooden cylinder with flowers, trees, and birds engraved with a green dye. I was supposed to give it to the human if she was still alive. She reached across the gap between us and handed it to me. I spun the small container around in my fingers, held it up to my nose to smell it, and then gave it to Nadia. It isn't poison. If we wanted to kill the human, we could have. She has her purposes, just like you do, O Barney. Islata leaned back slightly on her stool and crossed her arms. Nadia examined the piece of wood and then found the lid. She twisted it off and poured out a tightly wound scroll. I looked over to Islata while Nadia unraveled it, and the elven warrior gave me a wink and seductively licked her lips. "It is from the Empress," Nadia said, with a slight trace of awe in her voice. "You are incredibly stupid. I just told you it was from her. Really, O'Barney, I can't see why you throw your lot in with this one. She's pretty, but you aren't even fucking her. You must explain it to me on our ride." Nadia glanced away from the scroll and glared at the elven woman with so much hate that I thought she might draw her sword. "Stop harassing her," I barked. Suddenly my temper flared, and I came too close to lashing out at Islata. It would have been a horrible mistake, since she was perhaps my only ally on their side. I would need her to navigate whatever conversations I would have with their Empress. Islata was out for her own interests, and had somehow decided that I was the horse that would carry her to whatever destination she had imagined for herself. Islata looked at me in surprise, and then bit her lower lip. She glared at Nadia and folded her arms before speaking again. "Read the damn message, girl," she whispered. But Nadia had already been studying the letter intently for a few seconds. I figured she would give it to me when she finished, but I heard her heart beating faster when she got toward the end. After a minute, she put down the scroll and squeezed the bridge of her nose with her left hand in an effort to relieve the stress and anger she was feeling. "So, what will it be?" Islata asked. "I don't know," Nadia replied. "Don't get mad at me for the content of the letter. Get mad because I am taking your O'Barney from you." "What does it say?" I asked as I held my palm out to Nadia. She looked at me with sadness and passed the note to me. The paper smelled of sage and lavender. The script was beautifully written in this new language Pog had taught me. "Duchess Nadia of Naya, it is unfortunate that our first correspondence must be in this manner. I would prefer something more intimate, but troubling times unfortunately call for these methods. I have followed your exploits through various proxies and carry a deep appreciation for your accomplishments. It is no small feat to summon forth one of the Obarni, organize a kingdom's resistance, escape a treacherous dungeon, and then wage an insurgent war against a superior force. You have successfully defeated the Losher army, but now that I have arrived in your fair land, I have no desire to keep you as my enemy. I would prefer that we reach an agreement that benefits each of us and your kingdom moving forward. I offer you a choice between two options that are much more attractive than the eventual result of the path you are taking. Choice one. I would allow you to return to Naya with your army. You and your father will still maintain all of your holdings. I wish to set up a new advisory council with both of you. I will need your help rebuilding this country, and I cannot point to a better patriot than you. Very little of your life will change, save that your family's income will increase from your new roles, and your country will have the unlimited magic and resources that come from my people. We can work on specifics once you return to Naya. I hope you choose this option. Choice two. You leave this country with your army. I believe Brilla will accept you with open arms, but Graydar, or one of the other northern countries, could probably benefit more from your leadership. If you decide on this option, I will buy your lands from you for the sum of 18,000 in gold. This shall be delivered to you in the country of your choosing. You will never set foot in Naya again. I apologize for forcing this decision on you and understand that it will take some time to consider. I've asked for Islata to return with an answer, but she can leave a runner here with you if you need longer. If I do not receive an answer within a week, I will assume that you have declined both of my offers and shall act accordingly, but with deepest regrets. I have the fondest wishes and hope for our future. Talaxthi, Empress of the Ancient People. There is a traitor in my camp, Nadia said when I looked up from the letter. Why do you say that? I asked with a puzzled expression. I couldn't imagine a human betraying his kind to the elvens, but Nanos had. How did she find us here? Nadia glared at Islata. We've always known where your army was, human. The elven laughed. Bullshit. If you knew, then you would have killed us sooner. Nadia shook her head. Ah. That was Alatoric's idea, actually. I wanted to just kill all of you, but that would have left us the Losher to worry about. Instead, he kept an eye on you and didn't tell our allies. When you attacked their supplies too many times, they decided to take our gold and go back to their homeland. You should have seen the meetings he had with their chieftains. They were quite angry with us, but there was nothing they could do. You knew the land better, and according to Alatoric, our troops were otherwise occupied chasing after the Obarni and couldn't assist them. Fuck. My friend sighed in defeat and shrugged her shoulders. Her face was a mask of pain. Alatoric thinks that the failure of the Loshers to get a foothold here will lead to the collapse of their country's brief peace treaty. Soon they shall be fighting amongst themselves again, and no real threat on our border. Nadia nodded at Islata's words. I knew nothing about the Loscher's culture or political history, but my human friend didn't seem to doubt the statement. Is 18,000 in gold a lot of money? I wondered out loud. Yes, Nadia whispered. Even if I squandered the funds, it would last for a few generations. In my father's hands, it could last forever. She looked thoughtful for a moment. Can I read it? Islata held out her hand. Fuck no. Nadia snatched the letter from me and rolled it up again. Islata gave an exaggerated, pouty face that turned into an evil smile. What should I do? Nadia asked me with a sigh. She cannot be trusted, I began, before Islata interrupted me. The Empress always keeps her word, unlike your kind, O Barney. Islata flashed her teeth at me in anger. She spun from feral to maniacal to serene so quickly that I wondered if she had many different personalities in her head. Can we speak alone? Nadia asked Islata. Her voice was calm and had lost all traces of anger. The shift in emotion seemed to give the elven pause. She looked at me, then Nadia, and back to me. 10 minutes. Then I am taking the O'Barney. I have a mission to complete. We both nodded, and the elven woman floated out of the tent. I strained to hear her footsteps walk away. When I was confident she was out of earshot, I motioned for Nadia to speak. If I return to the castle, I can stay with you. Nadia's hands wrung the scroll case nervously. If she is telling the truth, I might still help my people here. My father and I can have our life back. This letter, she sounds... Nadia took a breath and thought of the word civil and agreeable. It seems that she really wants to work with me. It is a lie, Nadia. I shook my head. She'll kill you. She will say anything to get you to agree. The Empress wants you in her hand so she can crush your resistance. I held my hand out, palm up, and closed it into a fist. The knuckles in my fingers cracked to accent the point. She could have killed me any time. She could have told Islata to kill me now, Kaer. The letter seems sincere, doesn't it? She looked hopeful and brought up her hand to wipe away a lone tear. Fuck. I hate losing, especially to that bitch. She seethed and glanced toward the tent flap. Everything seemed to be getting better. How can we win this? You can't go to Naya. I pulled her into an embrace and felt her body relax against mine. Go to Brilla, and hope she doesn't betray her word until you get to the border. I wouldn't expect the money, though. She has no reason to give it to you once you escape. We need more time. Do you think that Islata will give us a few weeks together? Then we can plan something. Perhaps there is a third option. I don't think so. I shook my head and sighed. I believe the explosion in the castle, if I caused it, is pushing up the Empress's timetable on me. I am starting to piece together a rough idea of why the Elvens are here, and they expected none of my kind, let alone their destroyer. Why are they here? Nadia looked up into my face with a hungry look. I loved her curiosity. I believe they are fleeing my people. I'm not sure, but Alatoricht hinted to me about an agreement that the O'Barney have reneged on. Perhaps I can learn more from talking to the Empress. What will happen to you? If you don't believe she can honor a deal with me, she pulled away slightly in my arms to read my face easier. Then you can't imagine that she will keep you alive after she gets whatever information she wants out of you. I nodded at her words, but drew her body against mine again before answering. Nadia was tall, and her face buried into my neck during our embrace. She will try to eliminate me somehow, I don't doubt. I admit that I am interested in talking to her. First, she tried to kill me and kidnap Jesme. When that failed, she seemed to have a desire to keep me as a prisoner until she could personally question me, or at least that was the impression I got from Alatoricht and Islata. It will take us 3 weeks to get to the border. I don't know if Brilla will be the next country to fall. We might just be delaying the inevitable by fleeing. Her voice was warm against my neck. Can you escape and meet us there? I can try. The problem we have is that there is only one of me with the magic to stand toe to toe with their kind. I will need many years to build an army and train them, and I still need to train you. Brilla is too close to Naya. You know this world, though. Maybe there is somewhere where we can hide ourselves and gain strength. There is another country. She tightened her arms around my waist. I inhaled deeply. She smelled amazing. I just wanted this to end so I could spend more time with her. It is Astakal, south of Van Lorn. It is mostly desert, with a few oases and too many endless canyons to count. Their self-proclaimed king is really a merchant, or some say brigand, named Starrel. I know him. He will give us asylum if we come to him in need. I nodded and thought about my most recent memory. I could work with that sort of dangerous environment. Wait for me in Brilla for a month. If I don't come for you, then I have died. You can't let these elvens take your world, or it will be lifetimes of slavery for your people. You must do everything in your power to grow your army, nurture it, and fight back. I sighed and ran my hands through her smooth hair. If we had more time, I would show you how to change them. I could show you how to train them. I could... My voice trailed off as I searched for the right words. This situation felt frustratingly familiar. In my past, I had used the elvens as an excuse to put off Shlara, though the real reason I never let myself love her was much less noble. I will pray to the spirits to watch over you, Kaer. She pulled away from me. Her brown eyes stared into mine with sadness. I was looking forward to... She smiled slightly and brushed her fingers against my face. Getting to know you, she sighed and continued, in case you don't make it to Brilla. I will, I interrupted her. In case you don't, though, I want you to believe that what happened in your past is gone forever. You are a good man. I am thankful for the time we spent together. I wish we could have more. But isn't life an endless series of struggles for more? We are never satisfied with what we have. Tears slid down her face. Nadia, I searched my mind for something to say to ease her distress, but I couldn't think of anything. I was walking into the den of my enemies. I would be forced to talk to their ruler in some sort of diplomatic fashion. It was definitely outside my ability, and I might easily falter and end up dead. I couldn't remember ever having to say goodbye to anyone. My father and brother were taken from me in a way that didn't give me the opportunity. Everyone else who had been important in my life seemed to be with me until the end. Until I betrayed them all. You must forgive yourself. She pushed herself against me again. Her voice was just a whisper against my chest, but my superior senses made it echo in my head like Shlara's final scream. You made a mistake. If she loved you as much as you say she did, then she would have forgiven you. It was more than a mistake. It was a betrayal. It was unforgivable. The words stuck in my throat, but the pain lessened. Holding Nadia in my arms seemed to help. Her scent filled my nostrils, and her heart pounded against her ribcage and echoed in time with mine. The spirits feel no rage, Kaer. They just have love for those who continue to live. She is watching over you now and wants you to have a wonderful existence. That is a comforting thought. I almost laughed at Nadia's naive statement, but kept myself from doing so. Pog and Jesme had tried to explain their belief in spirits to me, but the concept seemed too convenient to be real. I didn't want or need to believe in something that I couldn't pull from my magic or crush with my hands. No, something inside of me, maybe a memory, told me that Shlara would not have forgiven me. Even if I had come to forgive Iolarothi. We clung to each other in silence for another few minutes. Outside the tent, I heard the sound of 200 elven warriors moving in the distance, speaking to each other and preparing to depart from the lip of the gorge. Then I heard Islata's soft footsteps make their way across the dirt toward us. "What is your answer, girl?" she asked as soon as the tent flap opened. "I will need some time to confer with my generals," Nadia said. I looked at her in shock, but she ignored me. "Fine. I will leave a messenger with a fast horse." The woman focused her green and gold speckled eyes on me. "It will take us 2 days to make it to the castle if we ride quickly. My warriors are ready to go now." "You are taking all of them?" Nadia asked in disbelief. "Except for the one that will deliver your message. I have what I came here for," she said with a glance to me that turned into a triumphant smile. Islata held open the flap of the tent, and I saw a small group of her mounted warriors assembled about 80 yards away. Other elvens appeared to be leaving the side of the gorge and moving northward to the flat area where I assumed their horses waited. It seemed like a lot of muscle to show in an attempt to capture me. Either the Empress didn't want to risk losing me a third time, or she wanted to ensure that Nadia knew how much power she had. Maybe both. Islata cleared her throat and then waved her hand in annoyance when Nadia and I didn't step out into the night quickly enough. Once we exited the tent, elvens dismantled our temporary shelter with practiced ease. There were suddenly so many around us that I felt my breath catch and my pulse quicken. I fought against the desire to strike out and kill like a sick man would try to keep from vomiting by taking deep breaths. I wouldn't wait until the last second. Sometimes messengers can get distracted and take too long to reach their destination. Islata gave Nadia a wicked smile. The Duchess clenched her fist at her sides in a poor attempt to control her anger. "That won't happen," I said. "She should decide now, and save my warrior the trouble." Islata's hand rested on the pommel of her broad longsword. An armored elven woman brought 2 sleek horses up behind Islata while she spoke. "No," I looked Islata in the eyes. "Your Empress promised a messenger. You said she honors her word. Or are you now a liar?" "Fine. I suppose I can grant you another favor, O'Barney. I've always given you whatever you asked of me." She smiled at me coyly and grasped the reins of the horse that were offered to her. I took the other set and swung myself onto the saddle easily. I had no travel clothes, not even a cloak, but while it was still winter in Naya, the season was mild. "You aren't granting anyone here a favor by doing what you've been told by your ruler," Nadia shot at Islata as the golden-haired woman mounted her steed. "I don't always do what I am told. Perhaps you shouldn't either." Islata smiled down at Nadia. "Now step aside, human, or I'll accidentally trample you with my horse, like we just trampled your kingdom." "Go fuck yourself, bitch," Nadia stepped to the side of Islata's horse and then turned to walk away. "Oh, I won't need to worry about fucking myself for the next few days, I think." Islata looked at me and laughed. She shouted in our old language for her troops to move out, and they did so immediately. Dust filled the night air and obscured the two moons from our vision like dense fog. I could see Nadia's body through the dirt cloud for 20 or so yards. Then she jumped off of the edge of the cliff and into the gorge paths. I nudged my horse forward to follow Islata away from the camp, my friends, and the deception of safety I had enjoyed. I should have realized that there was no way Nadia's troops could hide from the Elvens. They weren't used to masking their presence, and they did not have the abilities of the elements at their disposal. I recalled the various steps we had taken to hide ourselves and our camp from Elven detection. The forces of Naya had not used the most effective methods that I had discovered, space and hardship. Most of the Obarni camps had been over 500 miles away from the nearest Elven tribe, secreted away in an area that the Elvens would have considered uninhabitable, or at least inaccessible, the last place they would ever look. This was easier than I expected. You are always a surprise, Islata's comment broke my reverie. You didn't leave me much of a choice. I waved my hand around to the hundreds of armored elvens circling us. There are always choices. Your pet has an interesting one to make, I assume. Islata raised an eyebrow. Your empress trusts you to be her gopher, but not her confidant? Islata frowned at my question. I know plenty about her plans. I nodded, but didn't take the woman's bait. I did need to understand more about the situation I was getting into, but I guessed that it would be better for Islata to volunteer the information. Instead, I picked up the speed of my horse into a quick canter and put a few dozen yards between us. The darker of the moons was full, and the lighter one was half visible, but my vision, combined with the torches that most of the elvens carried, gave me enough light to see. My escorts matched my pace until the battalion was moving at a brisk pace down the wide switchbacks that led to the oak tree-dotted plains. "I believe you owe me," Islata said after a few hours of the journey. She had ridden in silence behind me. None of the elvens had done much more than glance in my direction. She pulled her horse up to match my speed. "Do tell. With your pet, Nadia, I mean." She smiled wickedly and licked her lips. "You were not kind to her." "Oh, but I was, Obarni. You see," she bumped her horse into mine and leaned toward me. "I could tell that the human desired you. She was in heat, practically panting around you. I am honestly surprised that I didn't smell your seed on her." "I fail to understand how I owe you." I looked at the elven woman. The light from the torches and moon reflected off her hair and eyes, making them glow an even brighter gold. "I could have told her about us." She laughed lightly, and then licked her lips. "What about us?" "Don't be a fool, Obarni. Jealousy has been a plague on both of our races since the Masters killed the gods. If I told Nadia about all the times you fucked me, I imagine that she might have had second thoughts about her hero." "It would not matter to her," I choked out. My stomach was starting to feel nauseated. What was this about the Masters and the gods? I remembered the old elven in my memories, the one that tended to the radical, mentioned something about them. Hadn't Entus asked me about the dead gods? "Perhaps I could have described our lovemaking then. Would you consider it lovemaking, Obarni? I wouldn't risk guessing what you consider our relationship to be." I took a deep breath and tried to focus on Islata's words. She opened her mouth again, but I didn't hear her voice. The sound of my heart beating filled my ears, and the inside of my mouth became too wet with the salty taste of my saliva. I could have told her about the time you fucked me all night. When we passed out, you were still filling my entrance. When I awoke a few hours later, you were hard inside of me, so I rode you until you woke up, and I climaxed for the 10th time. Do you think I should have told her about that? It sounded like she was yelling at me from across an ocean. Cold sweat trickled down my back and made me shiver. You were not supposed to remember. The dragon's last words to me came cascading like an avalanche of rocks. He won't die. This is impossible. What do we do? Gorbani's voice cut through my brain, and I brought my hands up to my temples in a futile attempt to stop the headache from getting worse. I didn't remember when he had said those words. I looked over to Islata, but she was looking at the dark road in front of us while she continued to talk. My mind missed another chunk of what she said, but her voice pushed Gorbani's out of my head. "And that is just what you have done with me." I could tell her about Virnine. "Do you know how disgusted she is with your kind?" She looked over to me with a chuckle, but didn't seem to notice the distress I felt. Or maybe she thought that her own descriptions of our fucking were making me uncomfortable. She told me that the idea of even touching one of you made her ill, but as soon as you slid into her tunnel, she climaxed like there was a tempest inside of her. I've never seen her orgasm that powerfully, and we have pleasured each other many times in the last 20. Islata's voice faded away with the darkness of the night. The torches were getting brighter and blinded me. My body grew so cold I had to pull more earth to warm it. I felt the horse slow down beneath my hips as if the animal sensed I was not well. "Hey, oh, Kyair," the skinny blonde man called from inside the barn. "Come talk to me for a spell." "I have work to do, Sklad. Another time, perhaps." I looked back briefly at the storyteller. His name was Wark, and I had only seen the man a few times. He stood in the entrance of the poorly lit barn. I could see a group of slaves, including my brother, whispering together a few feet inside the stable. The Sklad's performance for the night had just ended, but it looked like many wanted to continue to speak with the bard. "I doubt that, Kyair. Your brother claims you manage the stables. Horses sleep at night, didn't you know?" He bobbed his head and smiled at his own cleverness. Most were in awe of Wark. He was handsome, charming, and when he visited our tribe in this clandestine fashion, it was somewhat of a holiday. Even my father would push himself to finish the day's chores early so that he could hear of the news Wark brought from other corners of the world. The tales he told of olden times, and the stories recounted of ancient human heroes who once fought against the elven gods and their demons. I didn't like the man. "Sometimes they shit at night. Our masters like to ride an hour before the sun rises. If the stable isn't clean, I will be beaten." It was only partially true. My father, brother, and I worked at a smaller blacksmith and stable house that was located near the chieftain's residence. His family and the elders were inconsistent riders, and I would guess that no one would be in the stables tomorrow but me. "Ho, ho," he laughed and stepped away from the barn. "I suppose that makes sense. I'll accompany you then. How far of a walk is it?" "No, that is fine, Sklad Wark. I will leave you to your friends." I nodded over to the group inside the barn. At a second glance, I realized that they were mostly women gathered around my brother. I wondered if they were actually waiting for Wark or taking the rare opportunity to socialize with my ordinarily busy older sibling. "They will await my return. The night is young, and there are still adventures to be had." His hand rested presumptuously on my shoulder, giving a light tug toward the stables. The tall man had an unusual gait. His back was hunched, and his other arm swung unnaturally across his body with each step. People speculated on what had happened to him. We did not often see the malformed, as human babies born with even slight deformities were immediately disposed of by the elvens. If a child grew to have a handicap, or a slave was injured in a way that made him unable to work, they were also killed. The lame did not make useful slaves. The rumor of Wark was that his gift for story had come at the price of a straight back and working arm. I wondered how he had survived so long this way. "Tell me about yourself, young man," Wark asked after we were out of earshot of the barn. "We really shouldn't be walking together, Sklad. If our masters see us, we will be punished, especially if they find out who you are. It was against their rules for us to congregate at night, but if I was walking alone, I might explain that I was on some errand for my father. I didn't know if the elvens knew of Wark, but I couldn't imagine them supporting a human that traveled uninhibited through their lands, spreading news and fables that excited their slaves. If they found out what the traveling bard did, they would torture and kill him without hesitation. You see, I am interested in your opinion of my stories," he continued, as if I hadn't voiced my concerns. "Most seem overjoyed when I visit their tribes. They sneak me into their homes, make me endless meals, and treat me better than their own family." I nodded and understood why we were not allowed to read or tell each other stories or share news of other lands. Wark was one of the few connections to our past and the outside world. During my performances, I look across the entire audience and see their adoring faces, their eyes lit up with joy and their mouths hanging open, hungry for more of my words. It is like this everywhere I go, and while I offer no illusions about my worth to our people, I also must admit that I do enjoy the effect I have on them. I don't wish to offend you, Sklad, as I know that the service you provide is enjoyed by everyone here, but I really would like to be rid of your company. I don't want our masters to question why two humans are walking together. I pulled my arm away from his grasp and continued on my path down one of the paved hillsides toward our dwelling. He dashed after me and put his hand on my arm again. "Why don't my stories please you, Kyaer? I've been to scores of tribal lands and performed in front of thousands of our brethren. Each place has their naysayers, of course, but I can always give them a heroic tale or a bit of news that makes them happy. During my performances, you are like a dark storm cloud in the room. If you looked any unhappier, I would guess that instead of seeing my attractive visage, you were imagining that I was an elven, raping your mother's eye socket. I glared at the lanky man when he had finished speaking. I never knew what happened to my mother, but my father had told me she was beautiful, and the Sklad may have been closer to recounting how her life ended than I dared to guess. I don't like your stories, Wark. Leave me alone and go back to the people who enjoy your presence. Why? Is it my delivery? Perhaps the timbre of my voice or my facial expressions? I would appreciate it if you could help me hone my craft. I do not like your tales, or your news, or anything you bring to us. I am sure you are skilled in your craft, but if I did not like horses, I would not enjoy watching even the most perfect thoroughbred stallion racing to a victory. This is simply my opinion. You do not need the love of everyone to prove your worth and skill. It is nothing about you. I do not enjoy any Sklad. Hoo-hoo! He laughed again, and released the grip on my arm. Why don't you like them? He seemed genuinely troubled. Why should I? Knowing our past will not change our present or our future. We are slaves. Hope does nothing but hurt us when our dreams go unfulfilled. I don't understand why others find it so enjoyable. It is like smelling the decadent food of our masters when we are hungry. It is important for our souls. How can you go on day after day with no hope for a better future? He winced and continued his awkward gait. It was like he was used to being in a smaller body and didn't know what to do with his elongated limbs. We should concentrate on our work. What you do is dangerous for us all. We should be happy with what we have. At least we are alive. There are others who suffer greatly. But the ancient humans did not believe this. They fought against the gods. What do you think about the elven's role in those battles? Do you believe Sklad? I don't care for your stories. I don't even pay attention. They make me uncomfortable and angry. Now, if you don't get out of my fucking face, I am going to break your fucking nose. The man was half a foot taller than me, but working in the stables and wrestling with Leotol had made me strong. I certainly looked fitter than the entertainer. He pulled back from me in surprise, and we both glanced around to make sure no elven had heard my outburst. Very well, then. His eyes darkened, and he frowned. At least I can take comfort that it is nothing I am doing personally to offend you. Good night to you, I said curtly before I walked up the other side of the path. My father had gone to visit the other smithy after the performance and would not return for a few hours. I picked up my pace, eager for the solitude that the stable work would bring me. Boy, I heard him call after me. Kyair! I turned around and gritted my teeth. I had left the bard about 40 yards behind me, and I didn't want to run all the way back just to punch him in the face. Every battle begins with people willing to die for what they believe. Our ancestors thought the same. He nodded to himself and smiled. The green moon reflected off his teeth and presented me with what might have been a dashing figure, except that I despised everything about the bard. Fuck your stories. If our ancestors beat the elven's gods, then how did we end up as slaves? You just spread lies and false hope. You know, Kyair, I think you are right. These tales aren't that useful, and I can see why you don't like them. After all, our ancestors were fighting against their creators. We aren't in the same place, are we? He smiled and bobbed his head to his own words. I shrugged again at the odd man and walked over the crest of the hill. The grass on the other side was long and curled up like river water rippling in a breeze. I felt dampness in the air that accompanied the sound of the blades of grass rubbing against each other. It would probably rain tomorrow. I made it down the path and walked into my stables. The feel of the dirt on the floor and the wood grain of the first stall gave me a sense of security that the Sklad seemed to have robbed from my mind. I took a deep breath and exhaled. Everything was going to be okay. I just had to worry about cleaning out these stalls, tending to the horses, fixing broken tools and shoes. If I performed my duties correctly, I would not be beaten or killed, and neither would my family. He fell off his horse a few miles outside of the human camp. He's had a fever since then and has been moaning those words. I looked around the stables in confusion. A woman's voice was carried by the wind. Was she near the stables? "Oh, Barney, don't get fevers," a male voice answered. "Hello?" I called out into the stables. One of the horses snorted and stomped its foot, angry I had disturbed its sleep. "Hello?" I called again and sat. I heard the sound of a sword being drawn, but a sudden pain split the inside of my skull into what felt like 4 pieces. Had I been struck? The light was so bright that I couldn't open my eyes. I knew a blade had been pulled, so I pushed myself away from the noise. Something tripped my ankles, and I fell a few feet and landed on my right side. I reached down to my legs and touched a sheet wrapped around my knees. "Calm down, O'Barney," Islata yelled. I heard the sounds of four more swords being pulled from their sheaths. "Hold your swords," the woman shouted in our old language. "Don't attack. He is startled." I tried to move my hand away from my face and winced again in pain. Why was it so bright? My body felt like I had just been tortured. My skin burned, my head ached, and every single muscle between my feet and neck screamed with exhaustion. "Do not make any sudden movements, O'Barney. There are five guards, along with Alatoricht and I, near you. Can you see us?" My voice came out in a raspy croak. It felt and sounded like I was gargling dry earth. I made a few more attempts, and finally managed to pull my hand away from my eyes to view my surroundings. I was in a large tent of white canvas. It was 30 feet wide and long, with a 10-foot apex supported by a thick wooden beam. Islata had not lied. There were 5 elven warriors between me, the golden-haired elven woman, and her general, Alatoricht. The floor of the pavilion was paved with oak boards that felt cool against my burning skin. I wanted to lie down on them and go to sleep again. My body was so tired. I wanted to sleep forever. "You've alarmed Alatoricht's guards, O'Barney. I don't feel that they need to worry about you, but I believe that it will help their skepticism if you voice an acknowledgement." Islata smiled slightly and nodded her head. "Water," I gasped and pointed to my throat. "Get the O'Barney water," Alatoricht commanded. The guard closest to him flipped her sword into her sheath with graceful ease and darted out of the tent. "Can they put away their swords?" Alatoricht was standing in front of a wooden stool and sat down after he had finished his question. I nodded, and the guards all sheathed their blades. "You may leave," Islata instructed them. The 4 remaining warriors looked at me with suspicion, but then exited. They only made it a few feet outside the tent before taking up position. My senses had started to come back, and I could hear the familiar murmur and smell the scents of an active campsite. "Need help getting into your cot?" Islata smiled coyly at me as she pointed her finger. I shook my head and climbed back into the bed. I was only wearing a thin undergarment that protected my groin from visibility and the sheet that had entwined itself around my bony legs. The guard entered with a large flagon of water. She handed it to Islata, who passed it to me. It must have been a gallon of liquid, but it might as well have been a glass for how quickly I drank it. My throat felt better, and my body relaxed. I must have been extremely dehydrated. "More." I tossed the flagon back to the guard. She looked at Islata, who nodded and closed the flap after the warrior left. "Where are we?" I asked. My voice sounded like a log dragging over rough stone pebbles and felt like burning rust. "We are at the Empress's temporary camp outside Naya," Alatoricht said. His silver hair was tied back with an elaborate braid. He was wearing robes of blue with golden flowers embroidered on the hems. "You took ill, fell off of the horse while riding. I delivered you to this tent about 30 minutes ago. Alatoricht just arrived before you awoke." Islata crossed her arms and looked to the other elven. I couldn't understand the look they gave each other. "Now that you are awake, we must debrief our Empress. You should rest more, O'Barney. You will need to be at your full mental strength to speak with her." He smiled reassuringly at me. It reminded me of how much I hated the fucker. "Get out, then," I snarled at the elven, but I was mostly angry at myself. I was presenting an image of weakness. I needed to enter this camp on my horse with a scowl on my face. Instead, I had been dragged in unconscious by Islata, no doubt bent over her saddle like a spoil of war. "Before we leave," Alatoricht paused by the door and turned around with Islata to face me. I looked at both of them without answering. A few dozen seconds passed while they studied me. "What?" I finally said. "While you were unconscious, you spoke," Islata said. Normally she smiled, or frowned, or was a flurry of raw emotions, but now her face was blank and emotionless. They believed I did not know their language, and I hoped I had not dispelled that assumption while delirious with fever. It would be useful in my dealings with the Empress if they believed they could speak it freely in front of me. Did I say anything interesting? I tried to smile and keep my heart rate steady, but I think I failed. Islata and Alatoricht looked at each other again in confusion and then back to me. "You said the names of our dead gods and spoke in the language of the masters," she said cautiously. "You must be mistaken. I don't know anything about your fucking gods, or whoever these masters are." I felt my heart beat faster, but the nausea had not returned. "That may be so, O'Barney," Alatoricht said, "but that language is so old, we only know a few words of it, and we have never shared it with a human. It is the same language that the Destroyer used for the name of your people. It was why they called each other the O'Barney." If the Destroyer used this language, it must have been common knowledge during that time. Perhaps I picked up some during my travels. "You should not be concerned." I forced a smile and was thankful that whatever delirious conversations I had experienced had not given away that I spoke their language. "That is very interesting." Alatoricht smiled like a cat that had just caught a mouse. "That language was lost long before the Destroyer's time. Our people never used it. We wanted to forget about the masters. Historians can't seem to determine how he knew of the words." I shrugged. His historians must have had their information wrong. While none of my people spoke the old language fluently, we knew enough words to sprinkle into our conversations, and it was common to use it for names. "Regardless, I am sure it will be another topic the Empress will wish to discuss with you. She is very interested in both our races' histories, especially the Destroyer." Alatoricht opened the flap and beckoned for Islata to leave first. She shot a backward glance at me over her shoulder before she exited the tent. "Oh, that reminds me of one more thing, O'Barney." Alatoricht paused with his right foot on the dirt outside of the tent. "What?" I spat at him. "You should call him the Betrayer. It sounds odd to us, a human calling him the Destroyer. After all, it was not like the man performed genocide on your race, no?" I nodded, but didn't speak. The silver-haired elven cracked another one of his charming smiles, bowed slightly, and exited the tent. Then I was alone with my thoughts in the nexus of the enemy army.
Chapter 9. Jesme.
"Do you feel nauseated this morning?"
Beltor whispered softly so that Graykin, the two men from the horsebroker's shop, and my mother would not hear him. They were a few feet away, loading up the boat with our supplies. Actually, my mother was overseeing the men's work and criticizing their lack of skill. The wind whipped across the waves of the bay, fluttering the sails of the small sailboat, Graykin's beard, and my mother's hair, before it caressed my cheek as Kyaer had once done. "No, Uncle," I frowned. He had asked me this every morning for the last 4 days, and I had given him the same answer. I looked over again at my mother's back, her long blonde hair coiled behind her head like a snake waiting to strike. I felt fine. At first I had been so numb from shock, the fear and adrenaline from escaping Jury had carried me through the rest of that day, and I had been so grateful to be safe with Graykin and Beltor. After a few hours of riding, however, the adrenaline wore off, and I realized how sore I was from my clumsy run through the forest. My foot was the sharpest, most painful injury. A stabbing protest screamed from the wound if I put more than a slight pressure on it. But the most concerning was my bruised stomach. While my foot seemed to be healing just as Greta had promised with a little rest, the injury to my belly seemed to spread and ache more as we continued to the port town. I observed the changing colors of my bruises with alarm. I put a hand on my stomach now and asked my uncle the question I feared. "Do you think there is something wrong with my baby?"
"No, of course not."
He smiled at me and then took the last of the leather packs off of the horses and threw them over his shoulder. The two men came back from the boat, and Beltor handed them the reins of the animals that had taken us safely from Meriem and across Naya to Beliat. "You keep asking." I frowned and stepped out of the way of a group of men carrying crates to a large ship that was docked a few hundred yards from the one Beltor had acquired for our horses.
"Jess."
He sighed and then looked down from the horse to meet my eyes.
"I do find it odd that you aren't ill at all. You don't..."
He paused and looked at me critically before continuing.
"You don't look as women do with child. I know it is early, but still there are usually some signs."
He looked very uncomfortable, and I wondered what signs he was looking for.
"How late is your moonflow?"
8 weeks. I felt my stomach turn to ice. The wind pushed against my neck again, but instead of it reminding me of Kyair's caress, it chilled me. "I know I am pregnant."
"Aye."
He smiled at me.
"A woman's knowledge of these matters is more telling than the thoughts of an old fool like me. I need to run some errands in the city proper. It will be a bit of a climb. Care to join me?"
I nodded, and then held the reins of the animal while my uncle gave Graykin the last of the packs. Then he explained to my mother that we would both return in 15 minutes. "Be quick about it, Beltor. I have no desire to stay in this fish-scented rat's nest any longer." Mother glared at my uncle and then flicked her hair over her shoulder in contempt of her surroundings.
"This rat's nest, as you call it, is the second largest port town in your country. It provides jobs, industry, trade, spices, textiles, and grain to the whole northern population. And gold to your late husband's coffers."
Beltor struggled to keep his voice calm. "If this hovel is that important, then why haven't the ancients claimed it?"
"Did you not see the patrols we avoided to get here? The ancients have claimed the city, and I am sure it will only be a few weeks before they hold a military presence here."
My uncle and mother had never gotten along, even when my father was alive. The past few days of travel had strained the relationship beyond civility. "Fine, Beltor. As usual, you have to be correct, and I must be in the wrong. Go and take my daughter on your little errand. I'll see to the loading of this raft that you insist is a boat." She turned away from my uncle and then scolded Graykin's lifting method. Beltor grimaced when he walked toward me on the docks. His shaved hair was growing out a bit, so that it was a little shorter than what I remembered Kyair's to be. My thoughts swam to his face, his smile, and his voice. I hoped that he was safe, even if he was prisoner of our enemies. Graykin and my uncle seemed hopeful. Apparently the ancients wanted to keep him alive so that the Empress could question him. Kyair was smart and powerful, so I prayed that he might escape somehow and come to me. "Where are we going, Uncle?" I asked after we spent 10 minutes walking out of the dock area.
"You'll see, Jess,"
he said with a careful smile. His face suddenly reminded me of my father, and I looked away to ease the pain in my chest. "I am sorry about my mother," I said after we walked for a few more minutes through the winding streets of Reliot proper. Despite what she had said earlier, the city was beautiful, with its white and tan houses clinging to the side of the north and eastern bluffs like gems in a rock. The layout probably made the city feel smaller than it actually was, since it moved up as we went away from the crystal blue water of the bay, toward the sky instead of outward. Graykin told me that this city was easy to defend against water attacks, but it had been several generations since Van Lorn's navy dared to brave the treacherous sea and attempt to siege Relia.
You do not need to apologize for her.
I knew that he was right, but I still felt compelled to make up for her rudeness. It hurt me to see her be so callous toward my uncle, and I felt it reflected upon me. While we were nothing alike in personality or demeanor, I looked just like her, and I knew people who did not know me already assumed I was as haughty as she was by virtue.